the SOMA is excited to present Dr. Lonnie Jarrett. I'm sorry, maybe not. For all intents and purposes, Lonnie Jarrett to speak to us today. We have both a morning session and afternoon session with this amazing healer teacher and really true pioneer in our field. He was just telling me, you know, you guys have read the bio, but in the 70s, right after we were first exposed to this amazing medicine, he knew and felt passionate about getting involved in it. 4-degree about black belt? Kung Fu?
Taekwondo.
Taekwondo, I'm so sorry. Martial arts. And was in New York City exposed. One of his best friends was Chinese, got exposed to this amazing medicine. So I'm excited for this morning's class to have Lonnie Jarrett here, come all the way from the Northeast to teach us. And I'm really excited to hear about him and his viewpoints on the five element and constitutional diagnosis. Without further ado, Lonnie Jarrett. Give a big welcome.
Thank you. It's the most enthusiastic introduction. The only person who could have done it more enthusiastically would have been my grandmother. Well, let's wait till after to say it's impressive. Good morning, everyone. Thank you to the organization for bringing me here. I appreciate it, and thank you all for coming. We're going to look at, we're going to talk about five elements, constitutional type, and I'm going to give an overview of the depth of five element treatment, a sort of broad and deep philosophical perspective. People talk about the five elements and eight principles as if they're different, and it's just a ridiculous dichotomy based on political and historical accidents. You can't practice Chinese medicine without practicing five element, and you can't practice it without practicing eight principles. So if a TCM practitioner who does Zong Fu diagnoses that a person has arrogant liver rising, disturbing the heart, and they treat it with pericardium-8 and liver 2, that's a five element treatment. Right? And if a five-element practitioner says the practitioner is wood and their constitution is liver, they've just made an internal-external assessment. And if they say, I'm going to use moxa, they've made a hot-cold assessment. And if they say, I'm going to tonify using an acupuncture needle, they've made an excess-deficient assessment. So they're practicing eight principle. So Chinese medicine offers us numbering systems 0 through 12. So 0 is emptiness. 1 is non-duality. So there's emptiness and there's luminosity. That's the foundation. All the other views, you have to look through the lens of emptiness and luminosity. You have to have an embodied experience of the source, of the root, of the ground, of the timeless and formless ground of one's own being. You have to be able to look through that lens, not in a cognitive abstract way, but actually have a living relationship to those dimensions of the self. And then we have yin and yang, and we have the three heater, and the four divisions, and the five elements, and the six divisions of cold, and the seven pathogens, and the eight principles, and nine star chi, and the stems and the branches, and the Zong Fu, and the 12 officials. So we have, going from 0 to 12, we have these views. And because we're pluralists, postmodern pluralists, we also have to be able to some degree, read lab tests. Right? So the thing is, we're at a level of development that people were not at historically in the Han Dynasty. The pluralism means that everyone in this room is at a level of development where potentially you have the capacity to hold multiple perspectives simultaneously, right? So at a lower level of development, I'm right, you're wrong. I see this position, you see that position. That's where most people are at in Facebook conversations. Where everyone is resorting to the lowest common denominator and has to paint everything in the blackest and widest of terms, right? Do you understand? So you know, Stalin was evil, and Hitler was evil, and Hillary is evil, and Trump is evil, and because they're all evil, they're all the same, and there are no hierarchical distinctions. Everything's just the same. That's not pluralism. In pluralism, you can hold multiple points of view, understand the weaknesses of strengths and strengths of each, and apply each in a context-sensitive way. So I can look at a patient. People think of me as a five-element practitioner, but in truth, I apprenticed with Leon Hammer for 10 years, and when a new patient comes to me, I spend 40 minutes doing a pulse diagnosis with 50 places to put my finger, 9 different depths, 85 different qualities on the pulse, doing yin-yang differentiation. So the five elements gives me one view, the eight principles gives me another view, but sometimes I have to think in terms of the six stages. Sometimes I look at a patient, I'm like, I don't know what's good. The five elements just is not going to handle this. I have to use an entirely different paradigm to be able to treat this. Do you understand? So we want to be able to hold multiple views, and we're not just holding multiple Eastern views, we're Westerners, and so I guess when we say that, if I say that we want to have an embodied, consciously held relationship to all the different dimensions of who we are, we need to be able to hold Buddha's enlightenment, but also Jesus's enlightenment. And if you look at a picture of Jesus carrying the crucifix up, I don't know what happened. But in terms of myth, that's the foundation of Western civilization. If you look at the picture of Jesus carrying the crucifix with the crown of thorns, and you look at Buddha sitting under the tree, they woke up to the same thing. One said, thou art that. The other said, the Father and I are one. They woke up to the same one reality. But one had nowhere to go and nothing to do, and the other one had somewhere to go and something to do. So their relationship to what they woke up to in their cultures was completely different. And we can hold both of those and actually awaken to a third position beyond them. Okay, so that's the philosophical foundation of where we're at in terms of being pluralists. Pluralists, we can hold many points of views, consider the weaknesses and the strengths. So I've had 10 people come up to me this conference and say, I practice TCM, I don't do five element. And I always just smile. And what they really mean is my practice of medicine is relatively superficial, and there's an intuitive depth that I looked for in the medicine, and I haven't been met in my education. The school didn't meet that depth, and my own studies haven't met that depth, and I intuit there's a depth beyond what I'm practicing at. But that has nothing to do with, five elements is not more spiritual than eight principles. Five elements is a circle, it's a clock, and the eight principles is a square, it's space. So one is time and one is space. They mutually co-arise. You don't have one without the other. It's the foundation of duality. And it's good we live in a dualistic universe, because if we were all light, we wouldn't be having this conversation. Right? I mean, if God was still meditating and hadn't decided to become, we wouldn't be here talking about this. We wouldn't have any problems, but we also wouldn't have gotten to hear Jimi Hendrix. So in that context, I'm presenting the five elements through a spiritual lens, but that's just because if you lead a spiritual life, no matter what you're doing, your mind, your body, and your career are going to be a vehicle for expressing spirit. So nothing I'm saying is to imply the five elements is more spiritual. It's just, this is how I look at it. When I present the pulse, it's relatively more physiological, but physiology is the vehicle for spirit to emanate into the world. And then one would understand Chinese physiology as the physiologically embodied impediments to the transmission of light. Physiology just becomes understanding what's in the way. All physiological statements become a metaphor for ignorance. Okay. So here we have the Wuxing, the five elements. We call them five elements in the West, but really this character here Jing means movement. You should know my computer's acting funky and it might crash at any time. And if it does, I'm going to curse internally, smile at you and maintain dignity, and just reboot it and keep talking. So here we have what we call the five elements. I don't really have to present the basics, but forgetting medicine for a moment, what is this actually a depiction of? There are a few things we can notice looking at it. One, it's a hologram. Why is it a hologram? Because it's a picture of a whole. It's a picture of a whole divided into holons. A holon is something that's whole that itself makes up a larger whole but is comprised of smaller holes. So carbon atoms are a whole. All carbon atoms in the universe are a holon. They're complete. They don't need anything else. Right? All amino acids are wholes. Lysine is a whole. Right? All the amino acids are whole. A protein is a whole. An organ is a whole. An organ system is a whole. Every part of your body, we could take a cell from your tongue, your nose, your liver, your spleen, your kidney, or the bottom of your foot, and they all have the same DNA. So every part of you has an internal implicit image of all of you. So we notice that about this model, that it's a whole divided into parts, and each part references the whole. And this model, as far as I can tell, was first drawn in 1970. In other words, these are all relationships from the Nei Ching. The relationships are all in the Nei Ching, but I found no drawing in Chinese history prior to 1970 depicting it as a holon, depicting the holographic nature. Why? Well, it's just interesting that I think the capacity to think holistically in a self-conscious way, in a way to know that you were thinking holistically, right? My dog thinks, he just doesn't know he's thinking. We have self-reflective awareness. So there's a difference between having the capacity to do something and knowing that you have the capacity to do it, and there's a world of difference between the two. Human beings are Homo sapiens sapiens. Sapien means wisdom. We have double wisdom. I know that I know. I know that I'm talking to you, and I know that I know I'm talking to you, and I even know that I know that I know. And I know that you know that I know, and I know that you know that I know that you know that I know. There's no degree to which human consciousness can't infinitely step back from itself to be able to make whoever we are in the moment a subject and object. That's the course of spiritual evolution, is who you are now as the subject, who you think you are now, in the next moment of development becomes the object in your awareness that you can see. And when you can see something, you can operate on it. So holism became self-conscious to human beings. We were able to do it in the Han Dynasty and probably earlier. But we didn't know we could do it until we sent rockets up to space and the picture of the Earth came back. And then all of a sudden, we understood, right, the idea of Gaia and the Earth being a living organism. And all of a sudden, the subject became an object in our awareness that we could take pictures of. And then you start seeing these kinds of diagrams being drawn based on ancient relationships for the first time in history. What is this actually a chart of? This is a chart that depicts the relationship between the one and the many. Between the one and the many. So an interesting question to ponder is, we live in a culture where people say, I'm not religious, I'm spiritual. You have your truth, I have my truth, and nobody knows the truth. Pluralism becomes conflated with relativism, where every point of view is relative, so every point of view is equal, so there's no verticality. And in a sense, no morality. When people won't judge others, that's always based on a reticence to actually look inside and make hierarchical distinctions within their own self. So we've been living in a culture for 50 years where all the individuals in the circle have their own perspective on the center of the circle. We live in a culture, a pluralistic culture, where we embrace the many's view of the one, but an interesting question is, what is the perspective of the one on the many? What does it mean to look through the eyes of the one into the world of distinction? Into the world of distinction. This is actually a chart of that, because the foundational insight that Chinese medicine is based on is enlightenment. Right? The Buddha's enlightenment. And when you're looking through the eyes of the one on the many, what do you see in every direction? Just yourself. Because it's all of this just becomes everything going on out here in this circle becomes a reflection of just yourself. So what we have here is a diamond with many different facets, but it's just one light radiating through it. In a sense, it doesn't matter what your constitution is. So if the person is wood, you're going to do the source point on gallbladder. But if they're fire, then you're going to do the source point on heart. And if they're spleen, you're going to do the source point on spleen. Do you understand? But the source point in each of those is doing the same thing, which is connecting what's out here to the center, to the central transmission of light. So what we have here is a relationship between the one, that's where you are, and the many, that's where you think you are. Right? That's where you think you are. That's where you experience. Your consciousness, and you're driving down the road, and you have a tint on the windshield. And bugs are hitting it, and birds are pooping on it, and rocks are hitting it, and mud is getting flung up on it, and you stare through the windshield for 50 years until you think you're the crap on the windshield. And the physiological names for that crap are blood stagnation, qi deficiency, damp, wind, the seven pathogens, the pathogens that you've learned. That's the garbage on the windshield, and you become identified with it. And when you're identified with something, you pay attention to it, and what you pay attention to, you act out of, and your actions determine what you become. That's karma. Karma means deed. So what we have here, I'm sorry, let's go back here. What we actually have here is the relationship between the one and the many, and we have a conditioned cycle of emotion, thought, sensation, feeling, and weather. This is telling us the relationship between the individual and physiology, mind, the biosphere, culture, and cosmos. This is a map that places the individual's consciousness in relationship to physiology, biosphere, culture, and cosmos. Okay? That's a very significant piece that's missing, not just from the Western practice of acupuncture, but from the Eastern practice of acupuncture. The tradition I'm teaching you wasn't available for the most part to the average practitioner historically. The average practitioner didn't have the Nei Ching. Paul Unschuld, who's a friend of mine, he's the leading translator of the Chinese classics in the world, went to China, and the Chinese government, they were taking the medical notes of physicians for the last like 700 years and just using them as insoles to shoes. And he just went around China for 30 years buying them for pennies, and he has thousands and thousands of texts, thousands and thousands of physicians' notes. And he's slowly releasing them in a set. I have the first set. There's hardly a mention of five elements, yin and yang. There's a lot of information on how to make other herbs look like ginseng. But there's not a lot of reference to the deep philosophical principles that we're aware of in the medicine. That was not the average understanding of Chinese medicine. That was what the royal court physicians in the Han Dynasty understood, who were among the most enlightened and scholarly people with the access to the highest information, whose survival needs were met, so they had time to ponder these things. Okay, here's another way to look at the five elements. It's basically the same thing, but I've superimposed yin and yang over it. So here we have the winter solstice, the birth of the new light, and the light grows until the summer solstice, and then the sunlight becomes less and less. This is called the Sheng cycle, the birth cycle. The Chinese words for some see Sheng cycle, this is birth, picture of new plants growing. The Chinese word for samsara is Sheng Se, birth, death. Birth, death. Birth in water, death in metal. This is actually a cycle of samsara. The point is to escape it and discover oneself as that single light at the center of the circle. Right? And then if you look at pictures of Taoists and Buddhists meditating, you'll see the Big Dipper spinning the North Star over their head. That's Governor Vessel 20. The Big Dipper is the spoon in the sky at the moment of conception, when your father's jing hits your mother's blood, or in our language, when the sperm hits the egg and fertilization takes place. The Big Dipper is the spoon that takes an apportionment of the dark night sky and gives it to you as your jing, and it's radiated on. A light is invested in it by the moon, the stars, and the sun. And the Big Dipper is called the central administration of human destiny. And there are seven stars. Six of them have names: Taiyang, Xiaoyang, Yangming. And the middle one is Tianshu, stomach 25, heavenly pivot. So you have Tianshu, heavenly pivot, and the Big Dipper, the North Star, is the belly button in terms of the hara, and the Big Dipper is spinning around it. Here is another way to look at the five elements. So that's where everybody thinks they are, and there's that one central light just exploding through the center. So what is the highest outcome of physiology, practically speaking? Huh? Light, which is expressed, how do we differentiate light? Using like Chinese language or English. What's the expression of light when it comes through a person? We call it what? Shen. And Shen expresses, there are how many Shen? Five, right? So the expression of Shen, practically speaking, is light, is spirit. It radiates through the eyes, it radiates through the ears, the sensory orifices are sharp, we experience it as transparency, we experience it as positivity, we experience it as a selfless passion. And the word the Chinese use, which we translate in English, is original nature and virtue. In the infant, it's original nature, and in the sage, in the adult, it's virtue. So each of the elements has a virtue, and we can distinguish five virtues, right? So those virtues would be wisdom for water, humility for wood, propriety for fire, integrity or reciprocity for earth, and righteousness for metal. And when we say those names, we're distinguishing qualities of virtue in the same way that if I shone a light through a prism and we saw a rainbow on the wall and I said blue, green, red, violet, yellow, well, it's true they're those colors, but we never lose track of they're just differentiated aspects of the same one light. So in terms of the five elements here, on the interior, we have a cycle of thought, feeling, emotion, and sensation in what we call Chinese physiology. And from an exterior perspective, in the same cycle, we have a cycle of weather, the biosphere, culture, and cosmos. Most people's consciousness remains relatively independent of the weather, if you're healthy. right? But we have a lot of people, all my patients are vitamin D deficient because I live in New England and, you know, it's cloudy and it's dark. We don't get the sunshine you have down here. So a lot of people have seasonal affective disorder, and you can see that consciousness really isn't separate. People wouldn't explicitly say they're taking the weather personally. Now, when I go teach in Portland, if it's and the sun is shining, they go, oh man, you're so lucky. I know that if I teach in Seattle or Portland, and I always look up the weather and I know if it's good, half the people aren't going to be in class. Do you see? So people do take the weather personally, and the seven pathogen model, what we call the external evils, are all a result of people taking the weather personally. They're internalizing the weather. Wind, cold, damp, being put by the divergent channels into the elbows and the hip joints and the knee joints and into the organ system. So we want to not take that personally. So if I tell you that it's not healthy to take the weather personally, everyone would say, of course not. But if I tell you it's just as crazy to take your emotions, thoughts, feelings, and sensations personally, you go, wait a second, I am my emotions. Yeah. You walk in, the first thing most practitioners ask their patients, how do you feel? When you ask a patient how they feel, you're just reinforcing the notion that if they feel good, everything's well. Which is not, actually, there's no relationship necessarily at all between feeling good and being good, right? So serial killers can be feeling very good while they're doing something very unwholesome. And sometimes doing the best thing in the world can feel terrible, right? So the mythic death of Christ would be an example of that in Western culture. So we want to talk about constitution. Constitution is the tint on the window the individual sees life through. Constitution is Xing, and there are homophones. One Xing is this character for star, because constitution, this character here, this is the heart with three beats on the left, and then we see the character for life or birth. It's the same character on the right here, Sheng, as in the Sheng cycle. Do you understand? Constitution means the nature of your heart from birth. The nature of your heart from birth. It doesn't change during your lifetime. If whatever the operational definition is, constitution is what doesn't change. It's what stays essentially the same during your life. I've got blue eyes. I had blue eyes when I was born. I have blue eyes now. You can change the color of your hair, but it doesn't really change. I mean, mine was black. Now it's gray. So much for that theory. It's good. Everything's a work in progress, right? Okay. So constitution is the nature of heart from birth. This character also means sexuality. And it also relates to gender. And it comes from the stars. So the idea is there's a confluence. If we look at the spiritual tradition, there's a confluence of input at the moment of conception that acts between conception and first breath to lay the template and foundation of who you are. And in Chinese, that's called early heaven or prior heaven or anterior heaven or former heaven. All of those concepts relate to everything you get between the moment of conception and first breath, and that's what we call constitution. Constitutional type is a typing system. It's a typing system. The Enneagram is a typing system. Astrology is a typing system. Eight Principles is a typing system, because when you practice Eight Principles over a long time, don't you start noticing similarities between people with similar syndrome patterns? After a while, right, a patient walks in the door and you can just say, heat going from the heart to small intestine venting through the bladder. They don't have to tell you anything. You just look and you know. You can just see it. So a lot of what we do in Chinese medicine are typing systems. The constitution, as I said, is the tint on the window. It's the tint isn't on the filter that consciousness is seeing life through that implicitly screens certain information from awareness and only admits certain information to awareness in a way that always confirms who the individual believes they are and how they believe life is, while keeping out anything that would challenge self-image. So when I say filter, we could, in a spiritual context, we could say ego. It's the filter that builds the past I sense into the future to continue the I sense I had in the past into the future to maintain the status quo of self-identification with the crap on the windshield. And for the water constitution, the filter is blue. For the wood constitution, it's green. For the fire constitution, red, etc. A constitution is the quality of the template from the moment of conception. You get a physical form and a soul incarnated into it, and the soul is a vehicle for spirit, and the spirit is like wind blowing through the trees of the physical conformation. Even when there's just one cell, there's a physical conformation in that cell. The moment of conception is not neutral. People are bringing karma. I don't know if there were past lives. I don't have an opinion on it other than it's the only thing that makes sense to me. Okay? But I can't speak. I don't have memories from past lives. And if I do, I'm suppressing them. I'll just notice that in my clinical practice, nobody has ever told me who did a past life regression that they were an accountant in New Jersey who loved their wife and family and died happy. Everybody always has some fantastic story about being murdered at Stonehenge for doing herbal abortions. And I'll also notice that whatever a person is attributing their prior cause of... See, the cause of self is your level of awareness in any given moment. It's not significantly history. Human beings are the only form of matter I'm aware of that can envision a better future and live like it's already here. My dog can't do that as far as I can tell. And I've talked to him about this. But the conversation hasn't gotten very far. Okay. Constitution is the tint on the window that determines, given any particular life circumstance, how are we going to attribute meaning to it and then embody that meaning as a relative balance of health and pathology. And then you have to have the eight principle system, which is a greatly communist reduced subset of yin-yang thinking. You have to have elaborate yin-yang thinking to know, is it embodied as internally, externally? Is it fast, slow? Is it hot, cold? Is it excess? Is it deficient? Right? You have to be able to differentiate how it's embodied. That's what the eight principles gives us. How is it embodied as pathology? Five elements is the five element constitution is the weak link in the chain. There's a chain of 12 organs. This is what I'm going to talk about this afternoon in the entry exit class. And we all know there's a 2 hour, every organ is high for 2 hours, low for 2 hours. The flow of qi starts with the lungs and it ends at the liver and goes back to the lungs. And it's, you can just think of the whole thing as one tube and you can think of it as a clock. The constitution is the weak link that everything else is compensating for. Because of this, this is why five element practitioners look at eight principle practitioners who don't really self-consciously understand what they're doing with the five elements. It's not that they're not doing five elements. They just haven't self-consciously cultivated to understand what they're doing with it. And they look at it as being symptomatic. So if an eight principle practitioner looks at a doctor practicing who treats 50 patients with low back pain and tells them all to take ibuprofen, and when that doesn't work, gives them all three cortisone injections, and when that doesn't work, tells them they all need a back surgery, and when the first two don't work, then they fuse the spine and they go through the same protocol in anyone regardless, the eight principal person's going to say, that's symptomatic medicine. I differentiate. But from a five-element point of view, eight principles looks the same way because it's not getting to what is the weakest link energetically that all the syndrome patterns are an embodiment of the body's compensation for that fundamental thing. And if you can look through the eyes of zero and one, emptiness and luminosity, the five-element practitioner is still working in the wheel and is deluded. Do you understand? Because they're not looking through the absolute perspective at all that is arising. It's good to get to a level of development beyond, when we evolve beyond ego in the earlier stages. Let's say ego's fourth chakra. There are many ways to think about it, but let's just say fourth chakra. The fifth chakra is psychic. The sixth chakra is subtle. The subtle realm is the realm of the Indian totems and all the Vedantic deities and all the Tibetan deities. When you're at that level of development, you can see everything as a construct and as an archetype and as metaphor, but you're identified with it. It's only when you can look at it from the non-dual seventh and eighth chakra, which would be the causal and the non-dual realms. Vipassana would be causal. And then Zazen would be non-dual. Eighth chakra, non-dual, beyond it. When you're at the level of development where you can see everything as construct, you're still identified with the constructs. So it's good to be able to always have a top-down perspective from the one on all of it, which is also that center of the circle. The infant is embedded at the center of the circle but doesn't know it. So that character for virtue, Tao Te Ching, the Da, that character that means virtue and original nature, there's a huge difference between the original nature in an infant and the virtue of the sage. Okay? Sigmund Freud thought that all shamans were schizophrenic. They were all regressed psychotic. They were all regressed psychotics. And Carl Jung thought every infant was enlightened. He was an elevationist. So Carl Jung would refer to the infant as being in a transpersonal state of development. The infant isn't transpersonal. The infant is prepersonal. Right? There's a simplicity before complexity, a simplicity after complexity. Bruce Lee said, when I first started training, a punch was just a punch and a kick was just a kick. And then when I got very serious, there were 10,000 distinctions between how to punch and how to kick. But now that I've got it, a punch is just a punch and a kick is just a kick. And there's a world of difference between the two. The infant is spontaneously selfish. And the sage is spontaneously selfless, which has to do with the bodhisattva vow. In the transition from Theravada to Mahayana Buddhism and the institution of the Bodhisattva vow, which is that my spiritual practice is not for my own sake, it's for the sake of the whole. The theoretical wholeness is when every 60 facets of this diamond are performing their function for the sake of the other 59. When every one of these 12 organs are performing their function for the sake of the other 11, right? That would be like the absolute notion of balance in terms of the system. So the weak link in the chain is what everything else is compensating for. The problem with symptomatic treatment is if you work on the other 11 links, but you don't work on the weakest link, you've done nothing to make the chain better. From a five-element point of view and identifying constitution, we're actually getting to a fairly profound root of how the person is constructing and building themselves in real time through the attribution of meaning. So it's consciousness-based, which means it's spirit-based. The eight principle is more about the end result of that. Eight principles is thermodynamics. So if I say a person gets exposed to cold in Massachusetts in February and it goes in the body and they have strong qi, and the body raises a heat to push the cold out, but it can't push it all out, so it stagnates and keeps fighting. And the heat pushing against the cold creates friction, which creates inflammation, and eventually the body's qi becomes deficient and it can't raise the heat anymore, and then the cold penetrates more deeply. That's thermodynamics. That's pool balls hitting each other. That's straight Western thought, causal thought, and Eastern causal thought. And it's why it survived in the West under Chinese dialectical materialism. Dialectical materialism, Marxism, dialectical materialism means we're only going to talk about what's physically real, what can be measured. So the idea of constitution, sorry, hit the wrong, is that that weak link is what everything else is compensating for. And when we can start treating it, everything else holographically through resonance is going to be instantly rectified at a root, so that the person doesn't just keep recreating the same situation over and over again. So we have this character for virtue down here. This is the character from the Tao Te Ching. We have a picture of a human standing, but they're not just standing. See, this is a person, their eye is right here. They're not just standing, they're moving. So when you see this radical, it always means that there's movement, right? The person was here, now they're here. And that person is moving through the world, which is the five elements, right? Four directions and a center, and it's the number 10. It's the number 10. And the largest number in China was the 10,000, right? The 10,000 things. So this means they're moving through the material universe. And they can be scrutinized. They can be looked at with the eye. And no deviation can be found in their heart. That's the number one, which is heaven, which is yang, which is, remember, emptiness and luminosity. You don't have a character for emptiness. Right? That's off the board. We can't talk about it. We start with one, yang. Right? Okay. So it means virtue. It means original nature. It means alludes to the rectification of the heart. You can perhaps see when you look at these other points, zhen as in a jun, as in junqi, it means true, authentic, real, and you can see that's carried over to this character, Da, which means to have a straight heart, to be moral. And that's the right hand of this character, which is original nature and virtue. And it has overtones of meaning intuition. To rectify the heart is to restore intuition, because I can know the world directly with my heart, bypassing the eyes, which stand for duality. They stand for the mind. So I can know the world directly bypassing the heart. That's unfortunate. You can't see that. Maybe you have it in the handouts. What? You do? You have that chart in the handouts?
I can't get on my desk.
Well, okay, well, if you don't have it in the handouts, I apologize. It doesn't really matter. Don't worry about it. It's what it's basically, what I did is for each element has, virtue is the enlightened perspective. Virtue is the absolute perspective on life. And the absolute perspective isn't more real than the relative perspective. We're caught in a funny trap here. Absolute perspective is an oxymoron, because if it's a perspective, it isn't absolute. And we have to be able to hold the notion of absolute perspective on the one hand, and the idea that and then on the other hand, people say nothing is absolute is also an oxymoron. because that's absolute. I was once having, let's call it, a philosophical discussion. I went to my high school reunion, and I was at the table with the guitarist from my high school band and his wife. She thinks of herself as very spiritual, and she thinks my friend from high school, like, he's not the one who reads the spiritual books. So he's reading the morning paper, and we're having a discussion. And she bangs the table, and she said, "All absolutes should be annihilated." And I said, "All of them?" It's an absolute statement. So I said, "Jerry, what's wrong with what your wife just said?" And he looks down from the paper and goes, "Oh, it's absolute." And then he goes back to reading this dark market page. It was the end of that conversation. So the center line here is a center line of virtue, and then you can have excess and deficiency. So, for instance, humility would be the virtue for Wood, and then you can have arrogance as excess, belligerence as excess, and then false humility, low self-esteem, as the deficient presentation. So in this chart, I just went through all the different virtues associated with each element and looked at the excess and deficient presentation. It's in my book, Nourishing Destiny. So I'm sorry, I had no way to know that wasn't going to come out. It looks good on the computer screen. Okay. What? How am I doing for time? I just sort of go.
You've got about 25 minutes.
Till the break?
Till the break, yeah.
Oh, okay. So now what we're going to do is go through the five elements. And I'm going to just try to give a broad overview of the emotion, the virtue, and the spirit of each element. Yes, sir?
Again, this is the bottom part of the radical. What does that mean?
This?
Yeah.
This is a heart with three beats. And in the character for constitution, it's depicted like this. And they're the same. Here you can see the three beats. So the heart can be depicted in Chinese characters two ways. When it's on the left, it's generally depicted like this. And when it's on the bottom, it's generally depicted in this way.
And to clear up, referring back to constitution being the missing link or the weak link.
The weak link. It would be the organ that everything else is compensating for, that every other excess and deficiency you were able to identify in every syndrome pattern would be seen as a secondary or tertiary compensation for the liver not doing its job. Let me give you an example from my book. Think of the five elements as a family, and you're doing family therapy. And by the way, the foundation of being able to practice this kind of medicine is the practitioner's own integrity. So you don't have to have ever been pregnant to successfully treat infertility. You don't have to have had sciatica to treat sciatica effectively, but you're never going to engender a higher state of wholeness in a patient than you've been willing to fully and authentically embody in your own self. So the practitioner's own, The basis of this medicine is personal integrity. So Chinese medicine, at its root, is a science of integrity, right? If a person's yin and yang were perfectly interpenetrated, you couldn't generate a five-element or an eight-principle diagnosis. Nothing would be hot relative to cold, internal relative to external, fast relative to slow. Do you understand? Yin relative to yang, there'd just be one. All of Chinese medicine is a science of how yin and yang are coming apart and how to catalyze a greater wholeness. Take the present circumstance, move it in this moment to a greater wholeness in the next moment, and all the upright influences in an individual are pushing toward the imminence of that greater wholeness, manifesting as the person's greater integrity, which means moving the person toward the true, the good, the beautiful. And then there's a counterforce we can call resistance, which we can name the ego. And the ego in this context is just going to be the sum total of all the influences that oppose the reorganization of the individual in this moment to a higher state in the next moment. It's going to be everything struggling to stay the same. So when a patient comes into you, there are two patients. There's the person who made the call, who wants to be better, so they're coming to you. They're spending time, they're spending money, and they want to be better. And sitting in that chair in front of you is that person, and in that very same chair is the person who just wants to feel better without having to change. So I like to say that conservatives go to doctors to get drugs and surgery so they can feel better without having to change, and liberals go to acupuncturists, naturopaths, and chiropractors so they can feel better without having to change. And our job is to, we have to catalyze the emergence of that individual who doesn't have the problems that the person who came in with has, which means at the root they have to change who they think they are, and only through changing who they think they are, making the implicit explicit so it becomes an object in their own awareness. They're going through life thinking they're making free choices, and 70% of them are just chosen by their gut bacteria, which don't even have their own DNA. Well, that's true. When you're thinking, I really want that jelly donut, it's not you. This is just, you know about cordyceps? And how the bacteria drives the worm to go up and eat certain things, and then it grows out of it, that will make it thrive, and it grows out of its head and kills its worm, kills the worm. The outcome of most individuals' lives are being determined by what gut bacteria feels like doing. Okay. Anyway, I'm not sure I finished the idea, but we should probably... I can't remember. I was going in a direction with all of that. But we want to wake people up. We want to wake people up. So the five elements is an unconscious filter. We want to be able to educate people so they can see that actually the choices they're making are mechanistic, being determined by a template that was put in at the moment of conception. Understood? Okay. So let's look at the water element. The emotion of the water element, Kong, is fear. And this character means to hold the heart. So if we think about the five elements model, it's clear. I'm sorry, I know you can't see that. But you should get the idea that water over controls fire. Hopefully that's a little better. Water controls fire. So fear has the capacity to put out the fire of the heart. The virtue associated is jur, which is willpower. And will is the character, this character. And it means scholar. It means scholar. And the ancient characters would have shown it as plants growing over the heart. So willpower is the intention of the heart growing into the world as plants would grow in spring. Willpower is the flowing into the world of the heart's intention. So, and the virtue is wisdom. And I have this backwards, right? Because the spirit, you know, I changed this in another file. I caught this and changed it. So I must have opened an old file. So I did this all really quick, and then I went through and I edited the whole thing. So I must have opened the file in a hurry here. That still is the mistake. So actually, the spirit is will. So the Nei Ching would say that the shen in the kidneys is willpower. So that's why you have the heart radical. The shen in the kidneys is willpower. So the virtue is actually wisdom. So just reverse. There should say spirit. There should say virtue. And the character for virtue is here we have a person Here we have a person with an arrow in them, and it's having an arrow-like mouth. Okay? And down beneath we have a mouth with words in it. So having an arrow-like mouth, knowledge, to speak wisdom. So what is wisdom, practically speaking, in relationship to the water element? Wisdom is generated when an individual uses their will to move forward into the unknown in the face of their own fear. Wisdom is knowledge of emptiness. Wisdom is knowledge of emptiness. So when we look at pictures of the Taoist sages and many of the Buddhist sages, we see this increased cranial capacity, just like this fellow here. Oop, I didn't want to blind you. Right? You're dressed the same. You must shop at the same, same shop. So we often see the increased cranial capacity. So this is a depiction, metaphorically, of the transcendence of fear, the cultivation of wisdom, which physiologically is the transformation of jing and the movement of marrow up the spine to create increased cranial capacity, increased brain. Bone and brain are both transformations of marrow, which are physiologically embodied metaphors for wisdom. So we have this fire at the moment of conception. Father's jing hits mother's blood. We know that as a single cell. There's this fire of consciousness instilled as Shen by the moon, the stars, and the sun. The Big Dipper takes the apportionment of night sky. The moon, the stars, and the sun radiate light as Shen into it, and that fire creates two cells from one, four cells from two. Out of the Changmo comes the Ren and the Du, and then the Daimo binds it together, and then the Wei and the Chaimo takes us out into the world to be able to act and move and do deeds to create our karma with our arms and our legs. And then in 9 months, the fetus becomes full like a ripe melon. It comes out and is born into the world. That fire is at the base of the spine, depicted in many traditions as a coiled snake. And then you see enlightenment is also the snake, right? When you think of the pharaoh wearing the headdress with the cobra up over, representing the seventh, eighth chakra, non-dual. So we have the snake as a primordial potential. And then you see in Vedanta, you see Shiva sitting with the large cobra and then six other cobras representing the seven chakras. And then the eighth chakra is the non-dual lotus opening over the head. That fire is pushing its way up the spine. And every trillionth of a millimeter that it has to ascend is met by resistance of this huge force trying to keep it where it is. And all of the physiological syndrome patterns in Chinese medicine, from a Buddhist, Taoist point of view, are the embodiments of ignorance, representing physiological conditions in the body, which also implicate the mind through constitution, as all the forces that are resisting wholesome integrative change to the next highest level. When a person is on a spiritual path, doing sincere practice and a real practice, and they're holding the practice in the right context and they're changing, what they're actually practically doing is learning to have faith in a process of living beyond the mind and the unknown. The mind, what I call the mind, is an evolutionarily determined mechanism, a machine that orients human beings in time and space through the storage and retrieval of memory. And those memories are stored as thought, feeling, emotion, and sensation. Thought, feeling, emotion, and sensation. And the mind is a machine that stores thought, feeling, emotion, and sensation as memory. and a person, the ego, is a lens that filters all of consciousness onto the stored contents of the mind in denial of all the dimensions of the self that are universal and transpersonal, indicating oneness. The ego is what creates the illusion of a separate self that is biographical and historically based, and denies all the dimensions of the self that are unborn and undying, because it can't orient itself as an individuated self sense in the presence of those influences. When a person commits to authentic spiritual practice, if you're doing an authentic practice with an authentic teacher, sincerely, you should get to the edge of the cliff very, very quickly. It should not take months, let alone years or decades. If a person's a seeker for 10 years, you say they're very serious. If they're a seeker for 20 years, you say, man, they mean it. If they're a seeker for 30 years, you conclude they really like workshops. This person loves sitting quietly on pillows. They love ayahuasca, they love tantric sex, they love chocolate mud packs, they love the view from the front of Kripalu. But you have to start getting very suspicious. Because if you're sincere and you're thinking about it in the right way and you have a real teacher and you're doing a real practice, all we're talking about is a shift of attention, and that doesn't take time. It's just a shift of attention off of one part of the self onto another part of the self. There's no way technically. Acupuncture, you can stick a needle in almost any point and it'll create that shift of attention for the patient in a moment. But it's only going to be an experience. Mm-hmm. It's only going to stick to the degree that it's stuck with you. Mm-hmm. We as practitioners have to be living examples of people who've paid the price by transcending our own fear of evolution to develop actual wisdom. And when wisdom is present, it's present pre-thought and it's present pre-verbally, which means who you are, who we are. We need to become, if Chinese medicine is a science of integrity, then who we need to become are living examples of people with a greater integrity that's inspiring to patients, and through resonance rectifies their heart and their zhengqi prior to putting a needle in, prescribing an herb, or saying a word. Everything else, all knowledge and all technique in the authentic practice of medicine can only serve the integrity of our own self. And so part of the problem is, of course, because of deficiencies in our regulatory system and agencies and in our schools, all of the regulatory agencies and schools we have in this country are the same that produced Clear Channel and Fox News. And they're not going to produce anything different in this medicine. Don't believe for a second they're going to produce anything different. Mm-hmm. It's the same system. It's just the same way that our political system is the same thing that our medical system is based on. So wait until they fly planes into the buildings and then bomb them. Wait until a person has a tumor and then bomb it with radiation. It's the same worldview. The schools and the regulatory agencies in this country are not going to produce anything different than Clear Channel in this medicine, and aren't producing anything different. But good thing we have a measure of free will. So wisdom is the transcendence of fear and the embrace of the unknown. Wisdom, practically speaking, is the capacity to navigate in the unknown. The mind is a machine that creates meaning. When the mind doesn't know, we experience fear. When the mind doesn't know, it makes stuff up to ameliorate the experience of fear. So when a woman feels a lump in her breast, and it's going to be a week before she sees her doctor, another week before she can get a mammogram, and another week before she knows the results, those will be the best 3 weeks you ever treated her. And her mind is going to be going back and forth between, it's probably a lipoma, I don't want to die. You buy a lottery ticket, your mind's going to just, you don't know if you've won or lost. So your mind goes back and forth between, I wasted a dollar, how am I going to spend my $370 million? So when the mind doesn't know, all it can do is go back and forth in the default position between the best and worst case scenario. That's all it can do, is make stuff up. The person of wisdom has cultivated the capacity to remain at ease in the face of the unknown. Right? So you see that in the martial arts movies, when you just see the samurai walking and three guys jump, step out and just keeps going. Right? To remain at ease in the face of the unknown. So that's a tall order. So the thing is, if you're doing spiritual practice, you'll know when you're getting close, because you'll experience terror. So when people meditate and do Tai Chi and Qigong and all this stuff to feel good, all that's doing is reinforcing what binds us to the five element cycle is fear and desire. That's what binds us to samsara. And what liberates the heart-kidney axis is having the courage and the fortitude to overcome one's fear. So the equation for water, the spiritual transformation of the water element, is the application of will to move forward into the unknown in the face of one's fear, and that's what engenders wisdom. Now, if you're the consciousness at the center of the circle and you're incarnating into the water element, your perspective is, now I'm going to speak for God, but you know, it's audacious and it's ridiculous, but we'll do it as a thought experiment. So if you were the one consciousness in the whole universe and you were incarnating into the water element, I think your perspective would be the form of this body and the structure of this mind that comes out of the jing and the marrow, the form of this body, the nervous system, and the mind it engenders are vehicles for the transmission of my light. Right? So everyone has a bottom line. We know that water is the physiological foundation. 2 minutes I need. Water is the basis of the physiological foundation of all the syndrome patterns, right? So if liver is expending yang, trying to move stagnation, it only has so much and it'll become qi and yang deficient and the kidney will supply that. If the person is eating too fast, then the stomach has to really cook the food to break it down. It's going to generate heat and that's going to consume the fluid and the stomach's going to become yin deficient and the kidney will supply that. The kidney is the foundation of all the syndrome patterns, as the will is the foundation of spiritual life. So Confucius tells us, at 15 I set my will on learning. And then he gives us a 7-stage sequence, 7 stars in the Big Dipper, 7 holes in the head, 7 steps, 7 chakras to getting to the 8th, which is non-dual enlightenment. So he gives us a 7-stage to become enlightened. And the first is setting the will as the foundation. Everyone has a bottom line. Everyone has something that's more important to them than anything else. Most people don't know that they do. And if you ask most people what's the most important thing to them, they'll just tell you their ego's deluded self-image of what's most important. You know what's most important to a person when they're under extreme stress. The capacity to have wisdom is the capacity under extreme stress not to have one's worldview collapse, but to stay open. So, as the foundation of spiritual life, the foundational position that the individual has to adopt is integrity first. If anything's more important than your own integrity, when you're under stress, you'll compromise your integrity. If your relationship is more important to you than your personal integrity, you're going to compromise your integrity every time the relationship's threatened. And at best, you'll come out with a relationship that has no integrity. You'll have the relationship, but it'll have no integrity. If your integrity is the most important thing, no one can ever take that from you. It's the only thing that's wholly in your hands. Whether your acupuncture practice thrives, whether your kids thrive, whether your relationship lasts, no matter how much you give and how hard you try, there's always going to be some dimension of success that is just out of your hands and depends not just on fate, but on other people. But no one can take your integrity from you. The foundation of spiritual life is your own integrity. It's putting a stake in the ground and it's saying, I know who I am, I know why I'm here, I'm not going to move from it, no matter what. And then once you've done that, the rest of your spiritual experience in life will come as humiliation. But at least you know where the center of the bullseye is, because you put your stake there. So water is the foundation of the spiritual path. I want to be free more than anything else. My body, my mind are vehicles for the transmission of this light. And then you do practice and you wake up to the light. And then for most of us, you know, we're sorry we asked. Because it's going to be very much more than the thing that was asking ever anticipated. Like you intuit, we intuit as seekers that there's something huge. But that's very vague for the mind. And then when we see it, we realize we can't be anything in it. The ego realizes there's nothing here for me. So I told you I'm painting everything in broad strokes. I mean, in my books and in my longer classes, there's obviously a lot more to know about the water element. I'm just creating very big context. We're going to go on break. We're coming back at what time?
11 o'clock.
And then we'll try to get through the other four elements. Thank you.